Chapter 7. Abstained from cheese for 8 years, although he takes butter in considerable quantities. Professor Grime, having lost several teeth, is unable, I observe, to eat his crusts without previously soaking them in his bottled porter. How interesting are these peculiarities? ...11. Professors Woodensconce and Grime, with a degree of good humor that delights us all, have just arranged to toss for a bottle of mulled port. There has been some discussion whether the payment should be decided by the first toss, or the best out of three. Eventually the latter course has been determined on. Deeply do I wish that both gentlemen could win, but that being impossible, I own that my personal aspirations, I speak as an individual, and do not compromise either you or your readers by this expression of feeling, are with Professor Woodensconce. I have backed that gentleman to the amount of 18 pence. 12. Professor Grime has inadvertently tossed his half-crown out of one of the cabin windows, and it has been arranged that the steward shall toss for him. Bets are offered on any side to any amount, but there are no takers. Professor Woodensconce has just called woman, but the coin having lodged in a beam is a long time coming down again. The interest and suspense of this one moment are beyond anything that can be imagined. 12 o'clock. The mulled port is smoking on the table before me, and Professor Grime has won. Tossing is a game of chance, but on every ground, whether of public or private character, intellectual endowments, or scientific attainments, I cannot help expressing my opinion that Professor Woodensconce ought to have come off victorious. There is an exultation about Professor Grime incompatible, I fear, with true greatness. 12. Professor Grime continues to exult and to boast of his victory in no very measured terms, observing that he always does win, and that he knew it would be a head beforehand, with many other remarks of a similar nature. Surely this gentleman is not so lost to every feeling of decency and propriety as not to feel and know the superiority of Professor Woodensconce? Is Professor Grime insane, or does he wish to be reminded in plain language of his true position in society, and the precise level of his acquirements and abilities? Professor Grime will do well to look to this. 1 o'clock. I am writing in bed. The small cabin is illuminated by the feeble light of a flickering lamp suspended from the ceiling. Professor Grime is lying on the opposite shelf on the broad of his back, with his mouth wide open. The scene is indescribably solemn. The rippling of the tide, the noise of the sailors' feet overhead, the gruff voices on the river, the dogs on the shore, the snoring of the passengers, and a constant creaking of every plank in the vessel, are the only sounds that meet the ear. With these exceptions, all is profound silence. My curiosity has been within the last moment very much excited. Mr. Slug, who lies above Professor Grime, has cautiously withdrawn the curtains of his berth, and, after looking anxiously out, as if to satisfy himself that his companions are asleep, has taken up the tin tube, of which I have before spoken, and is regarding it with great interest. What rare mechanical combination can be contained in that mysterious case? It is evidently a profound secret to all. 1. The behavior of Mr. Slug grows more and more mysterious. He has unscrewed the top of the tube, and now renews his observations upon his companions, evidently to make sure that he is wholly unobserved. He is clearly on the eve of some great experiment. Pray heaven that it be not a dangerous one. But the interests of science must be promoted, and I am prepared for the worst. 5 minutes later. He has produced a large pair of scissors, and drawn a roll of some substance, not unlike parchment in appearance, from the tin case. The experiment is about to begin. I must strain my eyes to the utmost, in the attempt to follow its minutes operation. 20 minutes before 2. I have at length been enabled to ascertain that the tin tube contains a few yards of some celebrated plaster, recommended as I discover on regarding the label attentively through my eyeglass as a preservative against seasickness. Mr. Slug has cut it up into small portions, and is now sticking it over himself in every direction. Apostrophe, 3 o'clock. Precisely a quarter of an hour ago we weighed anchor, and the machinery was suddenly put in motion with a noise so appalling that Professor Woodensconce, who had ascended to his berth by means of a platform of carpetbags arranged by himself on geometrical principles, darted from his shelf head foremost, and, gaining his feet with all the rapidity of extreme terror, ran wildly into the ladies' cabin, under the impression that we were sinking, and uttering loud cries for aid. I am assured that the scene which ensued baffles all description. There were 147 ladies in their respective berths at the time. Apostrophe Mr. Slug has remarked, as an additional instance of the extreme ingenuity of the steam engine as applied to purposes of navigation, that in whatever part of the vessel a passenger's berth may be situated, the machinery always appears to be exactly under his pillow. He intends stating this very beautiful, though simple discovery, to the association. Apostrophe, 10:30. We are still in smooth water. That is to say, in as smooth water as a steam vessel ever can be, for, as Professor Woodensconce, who has just woke up, learnedly remarks, another great point of ingenuity about a steamer is that it always carries a little storm with it. You can scarcely conceive how exciting the jerking pulsation of the ship becomes. It is a matter of positive difficulty to get to sleep. Apostrophe, Friday afternoon, 6 o'clock. I regret to inform you that Mr. Slug's plaster has proved of no avail. He is in great agony, but has applied several large additional pieces notwithstanding. How affecting is this extreme devotion to science and pursuit of knowledge under the most trying circumstances. We were extremely happy this morning, and the breakfast was one of the most animated description. Nothing unpleasant occurred until noon, with the exception of Dr. Foxy's brown silk umbrella and white hat becoming entangled in the machinery, while he was explaining to a knot of ladies the construction of the steam engine. I fear the gravy soup for lunch was injudicious. We lost a great many passengers almost immediately afterwards. Apostrophe, 6:30. I am again in bed. Anything so heart-rending as Mr. Slug's sufferings it has never yet been my lot to witness. Apostrophe, 7 o'clock. A messenger has just come down for a clean pocket handkerchief from Professor Woodensconce's bag, that unfortunate gentleman being quite unable to leave the deck, and imploring constantly to be thrown overboard. From this man I understand that Professor Nogo, though in a state of utter exhaustion, clings feebly to the hard biscuit and cold brandy and water, under the impression that they will yet restore him. Such is the triumph of mind over matter. Professor Grime is in bed, to all appearance quite well, but he will eat, and it is disagreeable to see him. Has this gentleman no sympathy with the sufferings of his fellow creatures? If he has, on what principle can he call for mutton chops and smile? Apostrophe, apostrophe, black boy and stomachache, Oldcastle, Saturday noon. You will be happy to learn that I have at length arrived here in safety. The town is excessively crowded, and all the private lodgings and hotels are filled with savans of both sexes. The tremendous assemblage of intellect that one encounters in every street is in the last degree overwhelming. Notwithstanding the throng of people here, I have been fortunate enough to meet with very comfortable accommodation on very reasonable terms, having secured a sofa in the first floor passage at 1 guinea per night, which includes permission to take my meals in the bar, on condition that I walk about the streets at all other times, to make room for other gentlemen similarly situated. I have been over the outhouses intended to be devoted to the reception of the various sections, both here and at the Bootjack and Countenance, and am much delighted with the arrangements. Nothing can exceed the fresh appearance of the sawdust with which the floors are sprinkled. The forms are of unplain deal, and the general effect, as you can well imagine, is extremely beautiful. Apostrophe, 9:30. The number and rapidity of the arrivals are quite bewildering. Within the last 10 minutes a stagecoach has driven up to the door, filled inside and out with distinguished characters, comprising Mr. Mudlibrans, Mr. Drawley, Professor Muff, Mr. Ten, Misty, Mr. Ten, Ten, Misty, Mr. Purbland, Professor Rumman, the Honorable and Reverend Mr. Longears, Professor John Ketch, Sir William Joltard, Dr. Buffer, Mr. Smith of London, Mr. Brown of Edinburgh, Sir Hookham Snivy, and Professor Pumpkinskull. The 10 last-named gentlemen were wet through, and looked extremely intelligent. Apostrophe, Sunday, 2:00. P.M. The Honorable and Reverend Mr. Longears, accompanied by Sir William Joltard, walked and drove this morning. They accomplished the former feat in boots, and the latter in a hired fly. This has naturally given rise to much discussion. I have just learned that an interview has taken place at the Bootjack and Countenance between Soester, the active and intelligent beetle of this place, and Professor Pumpkinskull, who, as your readers are doubtless aware, is an influential member of the council. I forbear to communicate any of the rumors to which this very extraordinary proceeding has given rise until I have seen Soester, and endeavored to ascertain the truth from him. Apostrophe, 6:30. I engaged a donkey chaise shortly after writing the above, and proceeded at a brisk trot in the direction of Soester's residence, passing through a beautiful expanse of country, with red brick buildings on either side, and stopping in the marketplace, to observe the spot where Mr. Quackley's hat was blown off yesterday. It is an uneven piece of paving, but has certainly no appearance which would lead one to suppose that any such event had recently occurred there. From this point I proceeded passing the gasworks and tallow melters to a lane which had been pointed out to me as the beetle's place of residence, and before I had driven a dozen yards further, I had the good fortune to meet Soester himself advancing towards me. Soester is a fat man, with a more enlarged development of that peculiar conformation of countenance which is vulgarly termed a double chin than I remember to have ever seen before. He has also a very red nose, which he attributes to a habit of early rising so red, indeed, that but for this explanation I should have supposed it to proceed from occasional inebriety. He informed me that he did not feel himself at liberty to relate what had passed between himself and Professor Pumpkinskull, but had no objection to state that it was connected with a matter of police regulation, and added with peculiar significance, "Never was such times." You will easily believe that this intelligence gave me considerable surprise, not wholly unmixed with anxiety, and that I lost no time in waiting on Professor Pumpkinskull and stating the object of my visit. After a few moments' reflection, the professor, who, I am bound to say, behaved with the utmost politeness, openly avowed, I mark the passage in italics, that he had requested Soester to attend on the Monday morning at the Bootjack and Countenance, to keep off the boys, and that he had further desired that the under beetle might be stationed, with the same object, at the Black Boy and Stomachache. Now I leave this unconstitutional proceeding to your comments and the consideration of your readers. I have yet to learn that a beetle, without the precincts of a church, churchyard, or workhouse, and acting otherwise than under the express orders of churchwardens and overseers in council assembled, to enforce the law against people who come upon the parish, and other offenders, has any lawful authority, whatever over the rising youth of this country. I have yet to learn that a beadle can be called out by any civilian to exercise a domination and despotism over the boys of Britain. I have yet to learn that a beetle will be permitted by the commissioners of poor law regulation to wear out the soles and heels of his boots in illegal interference with the liberties of people not proved poor or otherwise criminal. I have yet to learn that a beetle has power to stop up the Queen's highway at his will and pleasure, or that the whole width of the street is not free and open to any man, boy, or woman in existence, up to the very walls of the houses, be they black boys and stomach aches, or bootjacks and countenances, I care not. Apostrophe 9 o'clock. I have procured a local artist to make a faithful sketch of the tyrant Soester, which, as he has acquired this infamous celebrity, you will no doubt wish to have engraved for the purpose of presenting a copy with every copy of your next number. I enclose it. Picture which cannot be reproduced. The under beetle has consented to write his life, but it is to be strictly anonymous. The accompanying likeness is of course from the life, and complete in every respect. Even if I had been totally ignorant of the man's real character, and it had been placed before me without remark, I should have shuddered involuntarily. There is an intense malignity of expression in the features, and a baleful ferocity of purpose in the ruffian's eye, which apples and sickens. His whole air is rampant with cruelty, nor is the stomach less characteristic of his demoniac propensities. Apostrophe, Monday. The great day has at length arrived. I have neither eyes, nor ears, nor pens, nor ink, nor paper, for anything but the wonderful proceedings that have astounded my senses. Let me collect my energies and proceed to the account. Section A. Zoology and Botany. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.